I love our listeners, man. Shout out to the people who get the joke, who get the bit. When I said Canes in two, you know, that's not like actually possible. But regardless.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. So here's the thing. Last week, based on what I saw in the first two games of this series, I don't think I was somehow losing the plot or hot taking it up when I said that the Carolina Hurricanes were a better team than the Boston Bruins. Was I? Was that an incredibly hot take? Was I completely off base?
Even through four games, they're incredibly better than them 5-on-5, no doubt.
See, that's the problem.
No doubt.
That's the problem.
But that's not the entirety of the game, though.
It is not. If we're being completely honest with what the Carolina Hurricanes are versus the Boston Bruins in this playoff series, you cannot sit here and tell me with a straight face that some way, somehow, Carolina is as, you know, at the level of Boston. No, they're better than Boston. We know they're better than Boston. They know they're better than Boston. But what did we talk about last week? You can't let the three big heavies get to you. So Bruce Cassidy, the head coach of the Boston Bruins, did the right thing. They put the perfection line together. That's the one line in this series that has absolutely outplayed the Carolina Hurricanes. Here's the problem. There's Corsi. There's Lowisms, and their best players are being their best players, while the Carolina Hurricanes saw two games in which their best players have been MIA.
I like our caveman hockey, though, so let's continue that.
Let's do that.
You said that the perfection line has outplayed the Carolina Hurricanes. Not true. You have to qualify that.
Okay, fair.
They've outplayed them in Boston when Cassidy has been smart and kept them off the ice when Jordan Staal and his line are on the ice. Jordan Staal has dominated that line in Raleigh. Cassidy was very smart, got those guys back together.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, the first goal that Boston scored last night, Ethan Bear and Brendan Smith were on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
Defensive pairing.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen in Raleigh.
Right.
Okay? And I'm not trying to cast aspersions on Ethan Bear and Brendan Smith, but they don't belong on the ice with Boston's top line.
No, absolutely not.
There should be an alarm that goes off every single time when Boston's – and with Charlie McAvoy out, they truly have three good players.
Mm-hmm.
So there should be a warning sign that goes off, like almost like the underground White House, like warning, Bergeron, Marchand, and Pasternak are on the ice. Everyone on the Canes should be aware. And I'm not saying they aren't. In this instance, you get to, on the road, at home, you get to change. So you get to pick who you're matched up with against. Rod Brind'Amour handled that perfectly at home. Bruce Cassidy handled that perfectly at home with his team up in TD Garden.
Mm-hmm.
I think, though, yesterday's game was problematic and indicative of the issues the Canes have had this season, even when they were running hot.
Yeah.
They would take some penalties, they would take some chances, and you go, okay, now, you understand when the money's on the table, you can't play that way.
Mm-hmm.
And just the disaster sequence at the end of the second period, where you get the goalie interference, you get the goalie interference challenge, which leads to another power play. Then you have Aho, you know, 16 seconds into the power penalty kill. It's a completely accidental play.
Sure.
With the stick to Marchand's face, and that's fine, that happens. But the Canes showed throughout this year they were a dominant team who somehow ended up on the penalty kill way more than they should have been.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what game four looked like to me when you boil it all down.
But it goes beyond what we saw in the regular season. Last week, one of the things that I was adamant about was you cannot let Boston troll you. You cannot let Boston do the things to you that happened in 2019 and 2020, where they get in your head and you feed off of that and you start doing even more dumb things. And that even got Rod Brind'Amour too. That got Rod Brind'Amour on Sunday as well. We can sit here and talk about, hey, Trocheck, what are you doing with the puck? Hey, Svechnikov, why, dude? Why? Right? We can talk about the accidental thing with Sebastian Aho or some, you know, you talk about the defensive pairings and some mismatches. That's all fine. But a lot of what happened on Sunday was a complete team meltdown right down to the coach, Rod Brind'Amour. Brind'Amour has to read the room with that goalie challenge. You got to read the room, man. And I think we all understand that Rod Brindamore has been incredibly important to the culture change with the Carolina Hurricanes in the last four seasons. They're not in this position without Rod Brindamore. They don't play the way they play without Rod Brindamore. There's been plenty of coaches who acted as though they knew hockey and invented hockey and got zero out of that organization, okay? So Brindamore deserves and has been given tons of credit for the state of the Carolina Hurricanes. However, there's also culpability in the head coach in challenging that interference when he challenged it. Basically, goalie interference in the NHL is the equivalent of NFL. What is a catch? Do you know what a catch is? It seems to change from week to week. I don't know what a catch is from time to time. Made a football move. Okay. Sure. Goalie interference is in the same boat. To your point about how things happen in the regular season, taking a lot of penalties, all that stuff, penalty kill has been outstanding. Yeah, you can run hot and still deal with that in the regular season because it's the regular season. The same applies for Rod Brindamore. If you want to make a point about officiating, do it in the regular season. He's been fined for it already. Gary Bettman was asked about this, the commissioner of the NHL, on Monday of last week when the playoff series started up and he happened to be at PNC Arena, where he's like, yeah, everybody understands that you cannot try to sway the opinion of officials and turn the tide based on your comments. So the NHL's fully aware of what's going on here, and they're not going to give Brindamore, like they were before anyway, they're not going to give Brindamore any sort of benefit of the doubt. There's no Phil Jackson, you know, mind games taking place with NHL officiating right now. So there's this big point about, well, in game one with Trocheck, I think it was the Trocheck goal. It was Niederreiter goal. So in game one, there was a similar situation, and they called interference. So I'm going to make this point. Well, which one is it? And then I could see Brindamore mouthing, this league's a blanking joke. Dude, no. Not the time and the place. Not the time and the place to be making this point, number one. Number two, when your team has been parading to the penalty box and you're lucky for it to be tied in that situation, why would you gamble and make it potentially worse for yourself by challenging when you challenge then on a very questionable situation? Huge gamble on Brindamore's part that blew up in his face. And that period, because that's the thing.
Sometimes you have to take your medicine.
Yeah, you do.
Sometimes you do.
And the thing is, the game wasn't over then.
Oh, it was just tied.
Yeah. But then it quickly got out of hand after that. Phew. So there's a complete team dynamic in that meltdown, and that was the issue that I had on Sunday. This team was supposed to show a level of maturity leading into this particular postseason that they had surpassed Boston in terms of skill, depth, and everything else. And Boston wasn't what it used to be. Goaltending isn't what it used to be. They were missing a key player, like you said, McAvoy. So last week when I said that the Carolina Hurricanes were going to win this series, tell me that I was wrong based on what you saw after two games last week. Friday's Friday. You know, you go back home, it's the first game, Boston's going to be amped up. Friday's Friday. Sunday was the disaster. Sunday was the disaster because they completely lost it. And then it was the cherry on top of the crap cake that they put out there was freaking Tony DeAngelo tossing his stick at Marshawn. Marshawn, who's mouthing to Tony DeAngelo, you're a racist. You're a racist. Google that one, because I don't have enough time to get into that business. But Marshawn knows exactly what he needs to say to Tony DeAngelo to get under his skin, and it presented itself at the end. I'm not isolating DeAngelo and the stick toss for more than what it is.
It's emblematic of their frustration,
yes,
and getting out of character.
Completely out of character. Should be. So what's going to happen on Tuesday? Are they confident enough that they're not going to lose their cool again with the Boston Bruins? Because if they lose Tuesday, it's a wrap.
It's trouble. How about just have a functional power play?
Yeah, there's that problem
on Tuesday
too.
Because we've talked a lot about how the Bruins were the better team in 2019, and you remember it was a parade of power play goals,
yeah,
for Boston in 19 in the playoff, mm-hmm, matchup. The Canes in 19 were so inept; it was bad when they went on the power play, and that's what it felt like on Friday night. I know you don't want to talk about Friday, because you're right. Boston was going to win one of those games.
They were
going
to win one of the games, yeah.
And that's fine.
Yes.
But I would say this. The Canes' power play was so inept in both of those games.
Mm-hmm.
You're just feeding into that perfection line, which is really just their power play unit.
Yeah.
If we're being honest. And when the Canes are so inept on the power play, as they were in game three, mm-hmm. where Code Kanyemi, bless his heart, he probably just figured out what that saying means now, but you can't give the puck away on what my man Jim Rutherford used to call a fancy Dan, getting all fancy Dan. I mean, he looked like he was playing hallway golf. I have no idea what he was doing.
Sure.
He was trying to pass the ball off the boards, and it literally led to a goal that gave Boston life in this series. Because it was 1-0 at the time. If the Canes score on that power play, this series might be over.
I'm with you on that.
Might be.
I'm with you on that.
It was a huge play. DeBrusque made the real play on it after the gift from Code Kanyemi. But the Canes' power play cannot be so inept that they don't even get shots off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching Boston on the power play. Do you know what Boston's power play looks like? It looks like they legitimately have one more person on the ice than the Carolina Hurricanes because the Canes are always chasing.
Yes.
They're always chasing. Boston, that line knows what they're doing. They have skill on that top line, no doubt. The Canes get on the power play and you're like, wait, did they multiply? Did they add a multiverse? Like, how are they covering all this ground
mm-hmm.
when you seemingly are chasing ghosts on your power play? And then you guys can't even get a shot off. So that, to me, is also getting back to some of those bugaboos from the regular season. You saw some of those inefficiencies on the power play. So if I'm the Canes, I want to approach this game just like you did all regular season, man. It's about the process, and your process stunk on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
So you got to – and the best thing about the Canes, the best thing about Rod Brind'Amour is they know – when they stay true to their process and play their game, they're the better team. That's what they have to do.
Well, we'll see if they actually do that, because on Friday they said that they were going to get back to their game, and they didn't.
Right.
And then it got worse.
Well, they got sidetracked. It's pure and simple.
They got worse. Now, you get to come home, things will be different. I get all that stuff. But now the Canes have put themselves in an unnecessarily difficult spot Tuesday night.
Reminds me of last year.
On PNC.
Reminds me of last year.
Oh, what, against Nashville?
Yeah. Right? They won the first two games at home against Nashville. And you're thinking this will be a quick series, because let's be honest, in the playoffs, you have to save yourself a little bit.
Well, that's the thing I don't know about. That's the thing I don't know about, because if you look at last year, what'd they do? They had a struggle. They struggled against Nashville.
Don't forget, they didn't play a complete 82-game schedule last year.
They didn't do that.
Even the year before. But like, I'm just saying, you remember 19.
They struggled against...
They got to the Eastern Conference Finals. They seemed out of gas.
They struggled against they struggled against Washington when they got to 7. They beat and then they beat the Islanders after that, and they swept them.
Swept the Islanders.
Only to get swept in the Eastern Conference Finals by the Bruins.
And that was a full season in 19.
Yes. So there's all sorts of ways you can look at the idea of, well, how much have you spent to get out of this series? To me, what this is telling me is you should have made quick work of Boston. You haven't. It has shown me, especially Sunday, it has shown me that you have not taken that next step like we all thought you were going to do. That's what it tells me. That's disappointing. I don't want to go like full dad energy here. I'm not mad at what I saw. I'm just disappointed the Canes are still capable of doing that stupidity. And they know it's stupid. I'm not saying anything that's out of turn here. They know it's stupid what they did. So are they going to put it past them? And they're going to bounce back and win on Tuesday night? Well, they better, because if they lose Tuesday night, that's the series. I mean, that's pretty much where I'm at on Tuesday night. Whoever wins on Tuesday is going to win the series. Might be 7, but whoever wins Tuesday night is going to win the series. But, you know, I can sit here and tell you all day that the Canes should still win this, but, you know, I was told that the series doesn't start until the road team wins. Got to break out the cliche, right? Got to break out the cliche. Last week, after what I had seen in two games... Actually, after I saw one in one game, Boston is not as good as the Hurricanes. Now, I know that doesn't necessarily mean anything in the NHL playoffs. Good teams get bounced all the time. Look at Florida, right? I mean, the Canes aren't the only ones that are suddenly finding themselves in series. Florida Panthers find themselves in series right now. Not what we thought going into the playoffs, or even earlier.
President's Trophy.
Right?
Jinx.
So... for me, it was the Canes looked like they had turned the corner on Boston specifically. Boston was a shell of itself from what we had seen in 2019 and 2020. The Carolina Hurricanes had bolstered their depth. They had made moves to get over the hump, and they had a particular personality about them that, to me, seemed like they were going to take it to the Bruins based on two games. What I was not expecting was the worst performance in a period that I have seen from the Carolina Hurricanes. In that, they let Boston, we know what Boston's about, and you still let it get to you. You know that they're trying to play within the margins because you know that's how they're going to win if they can pull it off. And you gave into it. And the worst traits of the Carolina Hurricanes regular season presented themselves in the second period and blew that game wide open. And then it just got worse from there, culminating in what I thought was not a big of a deal individually, but taken as a whole. Tony DeAngelo throwing a stick at Brad Marchand tells you everything you needed to know about the game. Everything. So you let that dude, who you know what he's about, get with you. And the Carolina Hurricanes can sit there like the drill tweet and say, we're not owned, we're not owned. No, you got owned on Sunday. You took the bait and you kept parading to the penalty box. Some of this was things that we had seen during the regular season. And also, I thought it was interesting that Rod Brindamore decided that I'm going to keep complaining about the league and trying to make a point at the worst possible time you could try to make a point that ends up costing your team yet another penalty kill that you have to go into a penalty kill. So the whole thing from top to bottom was just a disaster for the Carolina Hurricanes. And they've put themselves in an unnecessarily difficult position going into Tuesday's game at PNC Arena. That's on the Canes, man. That is straight up on the Carolina Hurricanes for the way they played on Sunday. It didn't have to be that way. It did not. They allowed Boston to get to them. I thought they were better than that. I thought the Carolina Hurricanes had grown from the first time they met in 2019 to where they are today. I was mistaken. Now, it's not to say the Canes can't still win the series, but they still showed you that. And this is a signal to other teams. Oh, we can still kind of get to them. Nashville did this to them. Oh, okay, maybe this is a thing that can happen. That's not a good sign for the Carolina Hurricanes going forward. I did not like what I saw on Sunday.
It's frustrating that the Hurricanes have put themselves in this position.
Yes.
They are the better team 5-on-5, no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
The special teams have been a problem, though. And specifically, their power play has been a problem because it seems like when Boston is on the power play, now, Boston had 9 power plays yesterday. 9. Mm-hmm. That's way too many. Even if you only give up 2 goals only, it still ends up being the difference in the game. Game 3 turned, in my opinion, when the Canes gave up the shorthanded goal, up 1-0, in a situation where they could have really stepped on Boston,
mm-hmm.
and they gave them life. Part of that, though, is their own power play is so inept right now. And that is big 2019 energy. And that's the wrong kind of energy that the Hurricanes need right now. They need what we saw in games 1 and 2, the dominant, even strength team. Defense is outstanding. Doesn't matter who's in net.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. You're asking about Freddie Anderson. Antti Raanta comes back. Pyotr Kochetkov is playing well.
Kochetkov was fine. Raanta's fine.
The 2 goals he gave up underneath his armpit on his stick side. And I love it. I love it when hockey tries to get very technical on you. they found his weakness. Oh, you mean when you take an unstoppable shot, you found the weakness. Got it. So we'll see. But the special teams need to be cleaned up. The number of penalties need to be cleaned up. And understanding that this is who's going to beat you from Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Buddy, Lampus and Hampus and Linus and Linus, they ain't coming back.
Mm-hmm.
All right? Head on a swivel. It's Marchand. It's Pasternak. It's Bergeron. I hate to oversimplify this for you. With Charlie McAvoy out for however long he's out. By the way, Charlie McAvoy, honorary PAC pro.
Because of COVID?
Because postseason potentially shut down by COVID.
Oh, jeez.
Charlie McAvoy and NC State baseball, and that's it. That's the entire list. with Charlie McAvoy out, Boston's got three good players. That's it. So, guess what? You better be ready for those three players because those players are really freaking good, as we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they do a lot of damage on the power play. So the best way to help yourself is to stay out of the penalty box. Again, I don't like to do this caveman hockey stuff, but sometimes you have to reduce it to its lowest common denominator here, and that's what it is. Special teams, special teams, special teams. Be better at your own and be smarter about the penalties that you take.
It's the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. Here's Tony DeAngelo on the emotions that are boiling over and the whole concept of playoff hockey. Because remember, he's not owned by Brad Marchand here, not at all. But, you know, he's just letting you know what it's about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what emotions we're talking about here. It's playoff hockey. We're losing the game, right? So it's obviously we're a little frustrated. I don't think anything happened. Nothing happened in the game. Everybody wants to write a little story about it or something, but we're trying to win a series here. So if you don't have any fire, then you're not going to win. So I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm not very concerned what anybody thinks.
So there's Tony DeAngelo, not concerned with what anybody thinks. Hey, look, guys, just bounce it back. Like, the series is not over, but don't do anything stupid on Tuesday like we saw in Boston on Sunday. From Twitter, this is from a gentleman that goes by the name of Brotherly Love 20. One guess as to where this is going. Perhaps the Hurricanes were not the only 2-0 series start that the OG crew had bad takes on last week. Trust the process. Oh, we're going to bring in the Heat and the 76ers into this? Look, I think we all understand that Joel Embiid is kind of a key difference maker in how this works. Oh, have you noticed that James Harden's game improved with Joel Embiid coming back? Because the Heat have to spend a lot of time trying to make sure that Embiid is not going to get over on him?
I mean, weird.
It's not. You want to talk about not overcomplicating things? I can tell you why the series is now tied up after they went to Philadelphia. Joel freaking Embiid, one of the best big men in the game. That's why. But that doesn't mean the series is over. Besides, it's good that the round two of the NBA playoffs have gotten spicy again because it looked like it wasn't going to be that way for the second round after what was a pretty entertaining first round, including Ja Morant is suddenly warming up and back. I don't know if between the Grizzlies and the Golden State Warriors with the Jordan Poole situation, I'm not saying this is what happened, but I could see where this happens, where maybe they're trying to make it seem like, oh, no, you know, Morant's knee, I don't know, trying to get Jordan Poole suspended.
That was such a weird exchange and protest.
He wasn't suspended.
Nor should he have been.
And he shouldn't have been. And now suddenly, 2 hours before the game or whatever, Ja Morant's good to go.
Mm.
Weird.
Speaking of which, did you see that the Sixers were fined $50,000 because they didn't list Embiid correctly on the injury report?
Why is that?
You better not mess with that injury report. That injury report is the greatest thing ever for gamblers.
It's interesting you bring that up because I had recently read, I want to say this was in the New York Times, it was in the Washington Post, about how hockey...
it's the worst.
Hockey is the worst.
Hockey is the absolute worst.
It's the worst when it comes to injury information. However, as you just saw with the NBA and the 76ers getting fined because they didn't properly list Joel Embiid on the injury, how that affects gambling lines. Well, guess who's deeply in bed with Vegas now? The NHL.
I was going to say, both of them are.
So this is, the NBA has never been, the NBA has not been like the NHL in that they're purposely vague for everything. Mm-hmm. Like, you could see, like in the NHL, a guy's leg could literally snap in two and he's
lower
out
body.
With a lower body concern.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Hampus Lindholm has an upper body, i.e. a concussion.
Yes.
Yes.
I think we understand what the upper body concern is, but that's the NHL for you. I am curious to see over the next couple of years, next 5 to 10 years, how that might shift because of gambling information. Bates Battaglia, former Carolina Hurricane. He's joining us throughout the playoffs. He's on the Heister Automotive Group hotline. Bates, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
So... did you ever chuckle to yourself with upper body concern or lower body injury? The secrecy of NHL injuries, man, it drives people nuts.
You can't give out all the secrets, you know? I mean, it could be literally anything. Your mind just wanders.
An upper body. What could it be? I saw his arm literally break in two. I don't know. It's an upper body concern. Bass Spectacular joining us here on the OG. Okay. So this is where I love to pick your brain because to me, last week, it seemed pretty simple. The Carolina Hurricanes, 5-on-5, or just in general, better than the Boston Bruins. The Bruins could get back in the series if the Canes allowed Boston to kind of mess with their head. Seemed like that was the case on Sunday, where they're just Boston's just being just getting to them. So, how do you pull yourself out of that? You know, once that final buzzer goes, how do you pull yourself out of a team that seems to have kind of messed with you?
You know, I don't know. They definitely looked off. Like they weren't as crisp. You know, obviously penalties were an issue. But as far as getting out of it, I think you got to keep it simple. And, you know, I hear guys saying that all the time, but it's so true. You just build on little goals. The more you move in the puck, you're getting little wins, the better you feel, and you just get back to your game that you're, you know, the first two games where they were just lighting it up. And I think that's just what they got to do. They got to keep it simple, and it'll all come back to them. And being at home is going to be huge. I mean, obviously, if being away is a problem, they got to need to work on that too. But, you know, coming home and playing in front of the Carolina crowd, there's nothing like it.
Bates Pataglia joining us here on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. Actually, Heister Chevy in particular for Bates Pataglia. When you look at the Canes and the way that they lost their composure, at least in my opinion, in Game 4, Bates, does that surprise you at all, given, you know, how Rod is a stick-to-the-process guy and how this team has had success all throughout, kind of playing their own way and not really being bothered by the opponent?
Well, I think that's something that can be a problem for a lot of teams. When you go into the playoffs where you're winning every night and you're feeling really good about yourself, and then you hit a little adversity and you're like, what the hell do I do now? You know, like it can get frustrating. And, you know, they're clearly a frustrating team to play against. I mean, we talked about that one guy on that other team that's a, you know, rat bastard, and, you know, he does his job. He's doing his job. You know, he's making things difficult for them. And, you know, they just got to work out of it. There's nothing specific. I think you got to pull each other together and play as a team.
Bates Pataglia joining us here on the OG. Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovias. 20 years ago was the miracle at Molson. I mean, this is just another dynamic of NHL Stanley Cup playoff hockey where how things might seemingly go can change in an instant based on the result of a game. So, you know, you want to take us back 20 years ago, Game 4, second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs?
I feel like your guys' memories are better than mine, but... Yeah, I mean, that was a huge game. We, you know, down by, what was it, two? Or I mean, it wasn't looking good.
Mm-hmm.
And that one game turned everything around. And next thing you know, we're in the conference finals and then moving on from there. So anything can turn the tide. It's one goal here, one hit there. Doesn't matter. Anything can happen.
Bates.
That's why you play. And like they've, you know, I'm sure everybody said, it's three-game series now. I mean, forget about the first four games. They're done. They're over with. And you just got to focus on game one and go from there.
So hold on a second. You're telling me you don't remember being down 3-0 to Montreal and you being on the power play and you getting in on that first goal to start the comeback?
Well, yeah. I remember that, but I didn't want to, like, toot my own horn.
Yeah,
you know?
No,
like,
you absolutely toot your own horn, Bates. Come on.
I was going to probably talk more about the other guys scoring before I said anything about me doing it.
Secret weapon.
But, yeah, and Nick Wallin, you can't
I mean,
forget
it was,
the secret
very
weapon.
Very memorable. I definitely remember it. It was great.
Bates Pataglia, former Carolina Hurricane, part of that 0-2 Cup.
No, you Google that, though, Bates? And the name that comes up.
Just now I did.
No, I know, but when you Google it and then the story comes up, and the first thing I see is your old teammate, Sammy Kapanen, and I'm thinking to myself, every time I see Kasperi with the Penguins, I'm like, that little kid, you remember when he was running around the locker room? That's amazing to me. Like,
yeah,
how old we are.
Yeah, really makes me feel old, especially I remember, I don't know what year it was, but he had to be 3 or 4, maybe 5, and he came out on the ice with us after a practice,
yes.
And he's mm-hmm. wheeling around, and I mean, he wasn't paying attention. I just ripped one across the boards, and I missed him by like 5 feet, and I was like, I'm getting off the ice now. So it was a little scary, and Sammy gave me a pretty dirty look, but I mean, you know. What was he going to do about it?
Bates Spectacular, former Carolina Hurricane. All right, man. We'll talk to you later in the week.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
I wonder if they do Kids Butt Monday on the Sports Hub in Boston.
Maybe.
Maybe that's beneath them up in Boston. So, I have made reference to the Sports Hub and WEEI up in Boston a couple times during this Boston Bruins-Carolina Hurricane seasons. To make a larger point that big market radio stations love to just, you know, look at the smaller markets beneath them or the, you know, a market team like the Carolina Hurricanes and be like, whatever, right? So like last week, if I was going to do Meatball Radio, I was like, all right, series is over. I don't even know where the Bruins play. I'm going to get their city confused. I think you said Providence. Mm-hmm. That's where, the Bruins and the Providence Bruins. That's where they play, right? I had some fun with it. Whatever. There's enough Boston transplants in the area that get the joke.
Well, so, you said they would struggle with where the Hurricanes actually play.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. So, on Friday, we talked to Matt Porter of the Boston Globe. He covers the Boston Bruins. At the end of our conversation, I thought I would continue the stupidity of making fun of big boy market radio and hanging up on Porter because I didn't like his accent. It's a stupid bit that was related to something that happened 3 years ago with Chip Alexander of the News and Observer when they hung up on him because they didn't like, I can't take a guy with a southern accent seriously talking about hockey. Something stupid, whatever. It went viral, no big deal. So it was a dumb thing, admittedly a dumb thing. And inadvertently, Matt's phone cut off on him. He didn't hang up on me. His phone legitimately cut out. And it seemed...
Yeah, we've known Matt for...
Yeah, for decades. So it was like a... So we leaned into it, like, oh, he hung up on us. Fine, yeah. Whatever. And we moved on.
Here's some theater of the mind to radio here. I know we're on TV, but...
Yeah, there's a little theater of the mind.
Yeah.
So I guess some Boston jabroni alerted Tutcher and Rich of the Sports Hub about our stupidity on Friday. And I love when this happens. Got them! Because they spent, I'm not kidding, folks, 15 minutes talking about it. And even proving my point of they don't even freaking know what market we're in. Anyway, here is Tutcher and Rich this morning on what happened on Friday.
And this one show had Matt Porter on, and we were brought up.
Oh boy.
I can see.
Okay.
So once again, this is Carolina. This is like right. The shoe's on the other foot. Now they have...
The outrageousness of me hanging up on some guy.
Yep.
Is still in their minds here 3 years later. They need to defend the city of Charlotte and the South as a whole.
What? So what? Pause it. Defend the city of Charlotte?
And the South... As a whole.
What? Yeah, I love Tutcher, man. All right, keep going.
So here is our own Matt Porter being subject to these guys in Charlotte.
Anyway, it's Charlotte! Woo! Anyway, so they play the exchange, whatever, and then they're done with it, and they come back.
That was awesome.
I like that you,
Matt. Matt was like, you're not hanging up on me. I'm hanging up on you. Done.
I also like that, like, the idea was a premeditated thing by me to, like, really rile everyone up.
Right, we want to go viral.
That doesn't matter at this point.
No, like, apparently. Yeah, like the whole thing was, I was like, dudes, we're going to have this really boring dude on, and I'm going to hang up on him. And you just watch the ratings are gonna start flying. Oh my God! How little personality do you have? I mean, it was a nothing thing. I assumed nothing would come of it.
I do like it, Matt Porter's. That was great. That was very funny by Matt Porter.
Yeah.
All right. You want to jack around? I'm gonna hang up.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Okay, I'll hang up. What do I want? I don't want to start anything with the Toucher and Rich show. Like, I'll hang up on you.
What a long-ass winded setup, too.
Yeah, I know. Like, well, I feel like it's a shot at me.
Well, of course it is. It's a shot at me. The show. One of us is all of us.
Well, exactly. Well, I'm taking, you know, responsibility for it because it's such a corny, preconceived bit. Like, that's how boring your show is. That, like, the idea that, like, I just hung up on, like, some guy.
So that was Toucher saying, how boring is your show that this is an entire thing? From that moment on, and I timed it, they proceeded to talk about this for 15 minutes. So I flipped the question back. How freaking boring is your show that you spent 15 freaking minutes talking about our podunk asses in Charlotte, North Carolina? Think about that. Oh, man, what a freaking jackass. Well, man, what a boring show. What personality do you have? Let me bore my audience talking about inside baseball with Charlotte Radio. Okay, got it. Anyway, this is yet another example where these guys try to act as though they're above it. They try to act as though we are beneath them. This is now two examples that I've given you with Paul Feinbaum and now Toucher and Rich. They can't freaking help themselves. You took the cheese. You took the freaking cheese. And I love it. Every single minute of it. Because who won in this situation? I did. Who won in this situation?
Charlotte did.
The Charlotte market won. All of the South just won. Because Boston doesn't even freaking know its head from its ass when it comes to these matters. Anyway. Thank you for proving my point once again.